So this reading from the Gospel this morning, from the book of John. There was a man of the Pharisees sect, Nicodemus, who was a prominent leader among the Jews. Late one night, he visited Jesus and said, "Rabbi, we all know you're a teacher straight from God. No one could do all the God-pointing, God-revealing acts you do if God wasn't in on it." And Jesus said, "You're absolutely right. Take it from me, unless a person is born from above, or in some translations, born again or born anew, unless a person is born again, it is not possible to see what I'm pointing to God's kingdom." "How can anyone," asked Nicodemus, "how can anyone be born again who's already been born and grown up? You can't re-enter your mother's womb and be born again. What are you saying with this talk?" And Jesus said, "You're not listening. Let me say it again. Unless a person submits to this original creation, the spirit, the wind hovering over the water creation, it's not possible to enter God's kingdom. When you look at a baby, it's just that, a body you can look at and touch. But the person who takes shape within is formed by something you can't see and touch. The spirit becomes a living spirit. So don't be surprised when I tell you that you have to be born anew, born again, out of this world, so to speak. You know well enough that the wind blows this way and that. You hear it rustling through the trees, but you have no idea where it comes from or where it's going. That's the way it is with everyone who's born again by the wind of God, the Spirit of God." Nicodemus said, "What do you mean by this? How does this happen?" And Jesus said, "You're a respected teacher of Israel, and you don't know these basics? Listen carefully." And then I'm going to skip down to the last paragraph. "This is how much God loved the world. God gave the Son, the one and only Son. And this is why. So that no one needs to be destroyed, because by believing in him, anyone can have a whole and everlasting life. God didn't go to all the trouble of sending the Son merely to point an accusing finger, or merely telling the world how bad it is. He came to help, to redeem, and to put the world right again." So ends our reading this morning. I'm going to tell you about a morning that happened 20 years ago, but I remember it as clearly as if it were yesterday. It was a bright, sunny May morning, about 5 months after Micah, our oldest, was born. And I opened my eyes that morning and looked up into the sunlight, and my first thought was, "Okay, this was fun." And my next thought was, "This baby thing, great experience. Motherhood has been amazing, but I'd like my old life back now." That was my thought. I'm not proud of this, but it is actually what I thought. And it wasn't until that moment, 5 months after our oldest was born, that I really got it, that you don't get your old life back, right? For better or worse, it couldn't be undone, right? Now, don't get me wrong. It wasn't that I wanted to give Micah back. If someone had come in the house and tried to take him, I would have probably killed them, right? So I didn't want my baby to go away. We weren't naive about what having a child would do with our lives. We'd taken birth classes. We'd painted the nurseries. We'd done all the things you're supposed to do. I'd gone to a half-time job so that I could be available to us having a child whenever that would happen. We'd spent months getting ready. And we'd embraced all the challenges of parenthood with as much creativity and enthusiasm as you can manage on 3 hours of sleep. We'd worked at it. But it wasn't until that morning, lying in bed, blinking up at the sunlight, that it actually hit me. My old life, that relatively carefree, non-mom life, was gone. And it wasn't going to come back, not ever. And I realized that though I had known this baby would bring change, I hadn't realized how deep that change was going to be. Somehow I'd imagined that I would just sort of do my old life, only with more diapers and less sleep. I had no idea what was coming my way. It was a lot bigger than what I thought I was going to have. It was not exactly what I'd signed up for. And in the succeeding 20 years, it's been both wonderful and terrifying and full of more God than I could possibly imagine. I tell you that story because that's what happens to us whenever we go through a big life change. There's always things that we can control, that we can fix, that we can get on top of. They're called technical changes. And so when we learned we were going to have a baby, we painted the nursery, we took birth classes, we read more books than you can possibly read. We asked for advice from everyone, and I swear there was a shortage of blue and pink yarn in the Adirondacks because we received so many baby blankets from people. Right? Those were all the things that we could control, and we set ourselves about changing all of those things. But big life changes are more than just a technical change. They're also an adaptive change that changes something about the fabric of who we are. It changes something so that we don't ever really get to go completely back to who we were before then. Those kinds of adaptive challenges, those make us go out into a land without a map that we don't really entirely know what's ahead of us and where we're gonna, how we're going to manage it. There's lots of things you can control about raising a kid, but any of you who have had a kid or have lived with people who have kids or have been kids yourself, which would be all of us, know that life is completely unexpected. Things come up that you don't know are coming, and you have to figure out how to adapt to it as it gets here. Adaptive changes mean we can't go back to our old life, ever. And that can make us a little anxious. Sometimes it can make us a lot anxious because it's not exactly what we'd signed up for. It's not what we can expect. We gain some things and we also lose some things. It may be that it promises to be more full of God, but I think all of us naturally, when we realize just what it is the change is going to be, have a moment where we think, well, could we just go back? Could we just go to where it was before this? And so Mitch and I, about that time, started saying, particularly to our youth group, where the girls in our youth group were so fond of holding our baby and passing him around, we started saying to them, be careful, having a baby ruins your life. And they would say, oh, no, you can't say that. And we're like, no, really. I mean, in a good way, but it ruins your life. Like, don't jump into this. Where we lived, it was pretty poor, and having a baby early was a pretty viable life option for a lot of those girls, and we wanted them to know what they were getting into before they got into it. So I think something like that is what happened to Nicodemus in our reading this morning. I think he was a biblical scholar. He was a Jewish scholar. And he'd heard about this guy, Jesus, who had some amazing things to say about God. And I think he went to Jesus to see what new things he might learn about the kingdom. And I don't think he had any intentions of being a follower. That's why he came at night. He just wanted to learn some new stuff about God. And then Jesus says, you know, you can't enter the kingdom unless you're born again. And you can just hear Nicodemus' brain screeching to a halt. Wait, what, born again? Can you go back in your mother's womb? What? And I think even when he said that, he must have thought, that was a really stupid thing to say, right? Because you can't do that. But he was just completely flummoxed by what Jesus was saying to him. They were not the words he was expecting to hear. It wasn't what he'd signed up for. I think he hoped that he would learn some new things that he could splice on to his old understanding about God. But what Jesus knew was that he needed to have an entirely different sense of who God is in his life. As we read through the Gospels, Jesus is never interested in just splicing some new things onto our old understandings of God, of faith, of him. Jesus is interested in making us a new creation. New from the inside out, born again, born anew, born from the Spirit, something that's completely and amazingly and life-givingly, if that's a word, life-givingly new. Jesus knows it's not what we've signed up for. I think he knows that if we had it up to us, we would never agree to launch into something that was going to make our old life something we couldn't attain again. That's why you get all excited about a change and dive into it and then realize just how deep it's going to be. But Jesus also knows it's exactly what we need. And he knew it was exactly what Nicodemus needed, even though Nick was a little confused and I think went home not having any clue what had just happened. I think whenever we launch into change, whenever we try to really be Christians in a hurting world, whenever we really commit ourselves to following Jesus, we open ourselves up for God doing something that's more than we ever expected, that's different from what we thought we were embarking on. It throws us off balance at some point. And there's a point when we find ourselves saying, you know, this is not exactly what I signed up for. Maybe I ought to go back. I think Essex Eats Out is a good example of this. So we and other churches in Essex make it possible for hungry folks to have a free meal every Friday night of the month, right? And there are all kinds of technical challenges to that. Dawn can tell you about all of them. She probably has a list running in her head as I speak. Who's going to set up the tables? Who's going to make the meal? What is the menu going to be this week? Who's going to wash all of those dishes? All of those technical things are part of what it takes to put on Essex Eats Out. And we do it well. It's amazingly successful. And people, when I'm here at Essex Eats Out, will say, I like this church the best. Now, maybe they say that to all the churches, but I don't think so. And yet, there was also, is also, an adaptive piece to Essex Eats Out. Because it wasn't exactly what we signed up for in the sense that we thought when we began that it would be a place for hungry people who didn't have food to come and eat. And that's been true, but what we didn't anticipate is that it's also a place where people who have plenty of food and who drive nice cars come to eat because then they can eat together and eat in community with other people. That wasn't exactly what we'd expected. That wasn't what we thought we were embarking upon. And so there was a moment, probably more than one, there was one moment at least that I was aware of when folks said, I don't know if this is really what we want to do. This isn't exactly what we signed up for. And thankfully, with prayer and with thought and with discussion and with all kinds of meetings, what we decided is this too is a ministry to give lonely people a place to eat. And if we stopped because there were people we didn't expect who were coming, then we wouldn't be feeding any hungry people at all either. And so we had to adapt what we did. We had to make it more obvious for people who have some resources to share those when they come. We have table hosts who sit and talk with folks when they're eating so that it is more of a community experience. If we're going to do it well, we need to shift a little bit in how we're doing it. I think this fall at Essex Church, the theme that we've embarked on, which is don't just go to church, be the church, or as Mitch did this morning, don't just go to church.
Be the church.
One more time. Don't just go to church.
Be the church.
There you go. A huge piece of that is inviting and welcoming people here who haven't gotten here yet. And what's not to like about being a welcoming and inviting church? Of course, that's what Jesus wants us to do in the world. But there are aspects to being a truly welcoming congregation that aren't necessarily what we expect when we launch into that kind of a program. Like it or not, for a lot of people who don't go to church, their image of church is that it's hateful and judgmental and mean. Sometimes because people have seen churches like that in the news, sometimes because people have had experiences like that when they've attended other churches, that churches are hateful and judgmental and mean. And we are not that. That's one of the reasons when I come home from working with really conflicted churches in the conference, I say to Mitch, Essex is a good place. We should stay there a long time. Because that's not the sense of this community at all. But people don't know that just driving by, right? And so we have to be extra public about who we are and how we are Christian. Ways to say to folks, If you come here, you will not find hateful and judgmental and mean. You will find loving and arms embracing and helpful and whatever else it is that you need on your walk to Jesus. But to do that, we have to be public about it. And we're New England folks. Being public is not our strong point on the whole, particularly about our faith. And so that makes us a little uncomfortable. That's when the adaptive change starts to be the rubber that hits the road, so to speak. That's when we're going out on a limb and we don't necessarily know what all is going to happen. And so we have to have meetings. We need to talk about, well, what does it mean to really be welcoming? And if we put a sign out that says something like, hey, here we're not hateful and judgmental and mean, although we might not want to say it just like that. If we put something out like that, what is that sign going to look like? And what's going to happen when different folks come into this congregation? And of course we're not going to be able to go back to the way that we were before. And yeah, we know we don't really want to go back to the way that we were before, but it's a little anxiety producing. And we're sure that God is in it, but we're not always comfortable. We're not always ready for the change that God wants to make in us, even when we try to show up as best we can. And so I think it's important for us to remember that Nicodemus didn't get it either. I think he just went home after he talked to Jesus, and I think his head was spinning. And I think in the succeeding weeks and months, his head kept spinning, and I would guess that he was pretty miserable, as having been told by this rabbi that if he was a teacher of Israel, he really ought to understand this. I think that he pondered that a long time, because the next time he shows up in John's gospel, he's trying to convince the other Pharisees not to condemn Jesus. He's coming out a little bit as a Jesus follower, right? And then the next time we see him in John's gospel, he's helping Joseph of Arimathea take Jesus down from the cross, and he's donated the 75 pounds of spices that they need to prepare Jesus' body for burial. He's being public about being a Jesus follower. He doesn't get public until that very last moment, but he does get there in time. I think that that can be true for us too. We get there in time. We go through a period when we're uncomfortable, and we go through it pondering and praying and thinking and talking and trusting in God and waiting for God to make a way out of no way, as the African American church said. I think in some ways we're a little bit like the Hebrews who were standing by the Red Sea, having just left Egypt and saw Pharaoh's armies coming to bring them back to Egypt, and said to Moses, "We want our old life back. We do not want freedom. We thought we wanted freedom. We want to go back to slavery because that would be better than being killed out here." And Moses says, "Wait. Wait and see what God will do." And what God does is something that we'd never have imagined, which is to part the Red Sea and let them walk through on dry land. So when change happens in a church, people get uncomfortable. Sometimes people leave. Sometimes they come back. Sometimes they don't come back. That is part of change. And as a church consultant, I help churches through that kind of change again and again around the annual conference. But when churches can stay with the change, when we trust in God, when we keep praying, when we keep asking, is this really where we want to go, and is there some adjustments we need to make as we go, as we do our best to be faithful to that change, God brings possibilities that we would never have anticipated. I'm guessing, it doesn't say it in Scripture, but I'm guessing that when Nicodemus helped take Jesus' body down from the cross, when he helped to embalm his body and all those pounds of spices, he probably thought, well, I did come out as a follower at the end, but this is the end because now he's dead. And I'm sorry I didn't do it earlier, but I guess this is all we're going to get. And what he didn't know was that 3 days later there was a resurrection, right? And so that is what God promises us. As we walk forward in faith, there is a new life. There's something we can't even begin to imagine. There are possibilities that only God knows. We can't go back to our old life, but the new life is full of Jesus and full of God, and it's amazingly good. May we go there. Amen.